It's not always the learning difficulties or dyslexia that cause the actual difficulty. It's this sort of criticism or the environment damages the dignity or, you know, self-esteem and the motivation of actually getting involved in a study in the future.
If you think about the world, lots and lots of people wear glasses. The three of us here all are wearing glasses. And so I think of dyslexia as kind of like that. It's something I have, something I have to be aware of. I have to deal with it, but it's certainly not the end of the world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our channel, FHSS Radio. I'm your host, Kitting. Have you ever found your mind wandering while reading or struggled to get through a book after a very long break? For many, this is just a temporary challenge, but for some, the pages itself seem to come alive, letters dance, swap places, and words reverse themselves. This is not something happening in the Wonderland, but a daily reality for individuals with dyslexia. So today, we're incredibly lucky to have two experts with us to unpack this. We're joined by Jenny Liu, an Eden alumni and a PhD researcher specializing in dyslexia mechanism and intervention, and Joey Adamson, she's an English for academic purpose tutor in our university. So today, we are not just talking about learning difficulty or reading difficulty. We are actually trying to explore a different cognitive lenses through glasses of dyslexia. Perhaps we can discover a truly extraordinary ways of seeing the world. So stay with us.
Well, hi, my name is Joy Edmondson, and I work for CELE, which is the Center for English Language Education here at UNNC. And I'm an English for Academic Purposes tutor, and I also work for the Writing Lab, which is academic support. So, and I have dyslexia.
Okay. Jenny?
Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm a PhD researcher in children's reading development and multilingualism. Hi, everyone.
Thank you for joining us. It's very glad to have you guys here. And we may start by talking about what dyslexia is to help our listeners better have a general overview of this, reading difficulties. So, Jenny, as the researcher in this field, could you please tell us what are some, you know, most common symptoms of dyslexia?
This is a very big question to answer with several simple sentences. So I'm going to start by several examples. So for people with dyslexia or with potentially and may have reading difficulty, people always feel like, okay, reading is very tired. The whole activity could be really tiresome. But this is just a very superficial feeling of dyslexia. So for example, if you see letters jumping between lines, between positions, or you can't read a straight line, or the letters keep changing, or the letters are not, you know, letter shape-like. So there could be all symptoms of dyslexia. Or it could be mirroring, so the reverse letters. It could be multiple features together. So I can't really summarize all these things into one sentence, but these are just examples of what dyslexia could be like. It's just not what dyslexia are like. It just could be.
Okay. So Joy, how do you feel when you read?
Well, everything about dyslexia is unique. Each person has a different experience. So I actually find reading now quite smooth and quite easy, and I really enjoy reading, but there are aspects that I have to be careful about. So part of it is learning a lot of strategies to help yourself be able to deal with the problem. And so, for example, if people spell out loud a word out loud, I cannot process it very well. So they can spell it, even a simple word, and I still don't know what it is. So I know that I have to write it down. As I hear it, I write it down. And if I want to spell out loud, I also can't spell out loud. I change all the letters back and forth. And there are out of order. But if I write it down and read it, then I can do it fine. So learning how to deal with the problem is really important in order to be able to function well. But it doesn't mean, it's just a way of dealing with it. It's like so many other things, we all have to learn ways of dealing with life.
I agree with that.
And so I think obviously it's unique for each people to experience dyslexia. And we are very curious about what kind of difficulties you guys might meet in your daily life, except from, you know, slow reading or other difficulties.
Well, dyslexia is not only about reading, it's also about numbers, because numbers are something you read. And so I know that, for example, I have trouble with telephone numbers. I tend to switch them back and forth. And I was never very good at math, because as I was doing the math problems, the numbers would move around and I would come up with the wrong answers. So I went into languages instead of math. That took care of that problem. But again, using very clear strategies can help improve the situation. And I think it's important for people to understand that everybody has weaknesses and strengths. There's nobody that has a perfect world. Some people are good at math, some people are not good at math. Some people are good at playing games with balls, and other people are really clumsy and can't do that. So dyslexia is not like some special thing way out there that makes you different. It's just one of a series of things of not being a perfect person, which nobody is. So learning, I think a lot of it has to do with your own self-confidence and people giving you self-confidence and your ability to say, okay, well, this is harder for me, but it's a challenge, not a total stop for your life. And, you know, looking up things, doing some research, talking to other people, figuring out what works for you, because it's not going to be the same as everybody else. And then using those kind of things to move yourself forward.
Yes, I agree. So for the people that I've met with dyslexia, what's tricky is actually the first step of learning either languages or math. It's about decoding information at the very fundamental level, as, you know, letters, as, you know, spelling, or math with you know, symbols or formulas, to remember all these formulas. So this is the first tricky step. But to be honest, there are many people with dyslexia that are really, really smart after they figure out a way to decode this information. Well, the thing is, dyslexia is not about, you know, brain, not about intelligence, not about anything. It's just a way to decode information very differently. So after the way that people can decode this basic, you know, fundamental, the starting point of learning a language or a math, they can excel in certain subjects. It's not about, you know, how the brain functions. It's just a fundamental level. So for people with dyslexia, you might observe or you might see that difficulties exist at the very beginning, but it just takes very different time or different patterns, different strategies. Like Joy said, you need to figure out the way how to, you know, overcome the first step. And then if you have done this, you would. Well, there are possibilities that you can excel in certain subjects. Well, also, you know, case by case thing, but I can't say for sure, but it's very likely to be like that.
You know, even so, you can perceive this issue positively. You can't really deny that it do have some negative impact on your daily life. So my next question would be, could you please share us with some difficulties that individuals with dyslexia may have in their lives, except from some, you know, reading difficulty that we just mentioned about?
That happened to me when I went to school in first grade. I'm an older person, so even in the United States, dyslexia was not so well known, not so well treated. So I went to first grade, and my teacher was trying to teach me to read. And she called my mother and she said that there was something wrong with me. I would never learn to read. And she told my mother that. And my mother looked at me and said, yes, she will. And so she took me home and taught me how to read. Now, I was very young then, and I don't remember what she did exactly. But her whole attitude was, yes, she will. And that was my attitude. If she said I would, then I would. So she worked out with me and we learned to read at home. And I'm a quite good reader. And I read in several languages. It's not just one language that I read in. So I think that the attitude of the people around you, the positive attitude, is really, really important. If my mother had just accepted that what my first grade teacher said, that I would never read, maybe I would never read. Maybe I would have been a terrible student. But I always made very good grades in reading. I made A's all the way through school in reading, even though it's not my strength. So it became a strength. It became a strength because I learned a lot of ways of dealing with it. And that was helpful. But I really think that support, positive attitude, taking it as, okay, well, this is a challenge. What are we going to do about this? Is very, very important in your ability to deal with it. And research. It's not just having a positive attitude. You can do this and no help. My mother sat down and researched what to do. And then she applied it. And some of it worked and some of it didn't. And then we tried again. There, you know, it's a trial and error thing, because each person has a different capacity or different way of seeing it, or their brain works in a different way. But that that willingness to work with the person with a positive attitude, I think, is absolutely necessary.
Wow. Wow. I can also contribute on this a bit, because where I grew up, it's been very common. I grew up in China. It's very common that sometimes the teachers could say, okay, this kid is smart, but not working hard enough. You might have heard that, you know, quite often as well. It's sometimes you can observe that this child may have learning difficulties. Does not have to be dyslexia, or they could be, you know, they could have some symptoms of having ADHD or, you know, Asperger or whatever. But it's very common that for teachers who can observe that this child can be actively get involved in the classroom, but they could not do very well during exams or, you know, paper or math or something like that, or writing in general. The thing is, I completely agree with Joey that it's not always the learning difficulties or dyslexia that cause the actual difficulty. Is this sort of criticism or the environment that make the child feel like, I'm smart, but not working hard enough? What do you mean by not working hard enough? I do my homework every day. I correct all my mistakes. I listen to the lectures every day very carefully. But what do you mean by I'm not working hard enough? So this sort of criticism actually damages the dignity or, you know, self-esteem and the motivation of actually getting involved in a study in the future, or the willingness to study around this subject anymore. So this is seeing what I feel like what I have observed really harmful instead of the dyslexia or the learning difficulty itself. And I'm really impressed by Joy's mother, that a parent can get researched around all these topics and, you know, actually apply some of the techniques. That's wow. That's what a parent.
She was also wonderful in making me want to read. She would read me books and say, now when you can read it by yourself. We don't only have to read. Like, she would read to us before we went to bed. But she said, if you want to read the book more for yourself, you're going to have to learn to read. So she encouraged me by starting a story and saying, now you try to read the end of it because I don't have time. And things like that, so that I would push myself. So I wanted to know the end of the story.
I really respect her, really.
She was a great mother.
Okay, so it seems that it's quite important to have a very supportive parent for some child with dyslexia. Jenny has mentioned about there are so many criticisms that actually prevent people with dyslexia from exploring their potentials. So but before we dive into how to cope with these kind of biases or criticisms, I just don't want to clarify, how can we distinguish dyslexia from other reading struggles? Because I know some people with anxieties, they can also suffer from some reading difficulties.
the first thing above every, other symptoms, the number one thing, that dyslexia is a long-term situation. It's a long-term condition that you go through your whole life. It does not change that, I can read when I was a child, but after TikTok, appeared, I can't read anymore. No, nothing like that. So if you can read or if you enjoy reading, then you can't. It's probably this sort of change does not really apply to learning difficulty. It's a very big topic of social media, of TikTok, of short videos. But anyway, go back to dyslexia. So first of all, it's a long-term condition. And second is that you feel like, how to put this in a non-academic way. So there are several symptoms to get, well, I don't really call symptoms, but like features overall. In dyslexia research, we don't really call symptoms or diagnosis. It's, too academic. It's, too serious to talk about.
Yeah.
It's just, just something like someone eats cilantro, some just does not. It's very, common thing. So basically dyslexia is a long-term developmental condition that people may have difficulties in decoding, right, or spelling words at different levels. So by different levels, we mean could be words, could be syllables, could be letters, and could be sentences, and could be the comprehension ability across the whole article, across texts. So these are the features of dyslexia. And when you look into these every words, what you already feel like, first of all, it's long-term, and then it's neurodevelopmental. It's neuro and developmental. By developmental, I mean you go through from child. And then you have difficulties in decoding, reading, spelling, or comprehend these sort of, words at different levels. So this is dyslexia. It's not like, because of short videos, because of TikTok. No, it's not like that.
Okay. Could you please introduce some professional procedures that you will take to get a diagnosis with dyslexia? I don't know, Joey, did you have receive some very official professional diagnosis to indicate that you actually have dyslexia?
I think so, but I think it was, again, I was a very young child, and my school kind of tested children and things like that. So I think I went through that process, and that was what caused the teacher to say that I had, learning dyslexia and would never learn to read. But the teacher herself was not very up on what is dyslexia, because the idea that I would never learn to read is probably not accurate. I mean, it's not accurate with all dyslexia. And that was just her very negative way of expressing it to my mother. But not every school does that. It should be done. It should be learning disabilities. All children should be tested for learning disabilities when they go into school at very young ages, like at kindergarten, so that it doesn't become a problem on a long range. Because once the child has difficulties learning, they lose it, as Janine said, they lose their enthusiasm for learning, they lose their motivation for learning, and they lose their confidence in learning. And that can create its own problems. It's not really the dyslexia, but the fact that they're struggling, it's like they're swimming upstream instead of going with the current. If you're swimming in a river and you go with the water, it's easy to swim. If you turn around and have to go against the water and everybody else is going with the water, you are fighting much harder than everybody else. So that can be very discouraging.
So how did you realize that you have dyslexia?
My mother just told me. I mean, that was part of the thing. She said, she said, you have something called dyslexia. This is going to cause certain problems, because she was also testing to see if that's really what I had, because this lady had been so negative.
Okay.
And, there were other things, like I wrote letters backwards as a child, like the E would be backwards. So there are certain things that are quite quite common in people with dyslexia that we could see. And even when I was learning to speak, I turned the syllables of my words around. So instead of saying perfume, I said fumpum. So I turned the syllables completely around. And that was before I ever went to school. I mean, that's when I was learning to speak at age 2 and 3. So there were certain things that later you could go back and say, oh, this might be an indication of this problem. But again, and I still have that problem. I still have that problem when I learn a new language. I turn the syllables around until I know the word very, very well. So I know I do that, and I know I have to stop and really think about it, and I make more mistakes that way. Okay, I make more mistakes. I just keep going. There's nobody that speaks a foreign language that doesn't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And each person makes them in different areas. Maybe mine is, you know, putting the words backwards, and somebody else's grammar is really bad. So that's the point. A point I wanted to make is that everybody has something. This is not, there's not like there's these perfect people who are normal and then a few people who are ruined or bad or destroyed or not good enough. Nobody in the world is perfect. Some people are good at this and some people are good at that. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about a kind of metaphor. If you think about the world, lots and lots of people wear glasses. The three of us here all are wearing glasses. And if we took our glasses off and tried to function in the world, all of a sudden we all have handicaps.
Yeah.
So, but we don't think of ourselves as handicaps because we have glasses. So that fixes the problem and we just go forward. And still, it's not comfortable. I mean, if I go out in the cold, my glasses fog up and I have to clean them off. But it's not the end of the world that I wear glasses. And many people wear glasses. And so I think of dyslexia as kind of like that. It's something I have, something I have to be aware of. I have to deal with it. But it's certainly not the end of the world. And it's certainly something that other people have, if not that thing, other things that they're dealing with. So I just look at it as a very common and normal thing that everybody has something.
Okay. So Jenny, can you share some professional procedures that people with dyslexia will usually take?
There are many different types of dyslexia assessment, but overall, I can categorize them into different, you know, types or basic fundamental chunks of assessment. So the first one is the cognitive level. It will be metalinguistic awareness. So what is metalinguistic awareness? It's the ability to reflect on language aspects. So it could be, like Joey said, grammar-wise, or it could be, you know, syllable-wise, like phonological-wise. It could be syntax-wise. It could be morpheme-wise. It could be many different types. But overall, it's the ability to realize, okay, what are the language am I dealing with? So these are the reflection, the awareness of perceiving all these language aspects. This is the first cognitive level. And then we're talking about the second chunks of assessment are the basic reading and writing ability. So the actual ability, the actual fine-grained criteria in assessing how are we, you know, perceiving, how do we look at your, you know, real reading and writing ability. And the third type I found personally really interesting is the general cognitive wise. So that including your memory ability, which does not often associated with reading and writing ability, but it does affect your learning ability, right? So your memory, it could be long-term and short-term working memory. Some people have assessment, have intelligence, what's that called? Intelligence quotient, the IQ test. But to be honest, we do. Personally, I don't really, you know, take that as part of dyslexia assessment. It, you know, it does not associate with IQ thing. But it just sometimes to exclude that this sort of learning disability is because of IQ. But, you know, it's, you know, open to debate. But anyway, and there is a fourth chunks of assessment that are often associated with policies that the school can contribute or make to this specific person. That often involves a whole reading paragraph that, you know, with real reading tests, with real writing tests, with, you know, even typing sometimes. This is to see how much longer, how much more time you need to finish a proper exam so that the school can make a policy. Okay, for this specific student, A, B, C, we can make policy that extend
you know, 50% of the exam time, or we can make a person read out all these questions for this student, or, you know, sometimes all different types of policy. But this chunk of assessment is not part of the actual dyslexia assessment, and it's very different depending on different situations. It just gives some reference to the schools to make, you know, I have some statistical evidence to make a policy and, or, you know, makes extenuating circumstances to a student. Yeah. Basically these types.
Maybe this is not the right time for this question, but I also want to say some of the things that can be done to help students with this. So if one thing that's very important and that we've been working on here at UNNC a lot, in especially in Sealy, which is the first year level, is creating accessible PowerPoints. So there are lots of things that if they are looked after carefully, help students with dyslexia to be able to overcome some of the problems. For example, if the words, if you're writing several lines together, if the words are not too close, if they have space between them, it makes it easier for the eyes to track. If you use fonts, which is the kind of writing that are very clear and not what's called a serif, which means they have little hook things on them to make them beautiful, that helps. If you want to emphasize something, if you don't do underlining or italics, but if you put it in bold, underlining disrupts the letters that go below the line, which causes difficulty in people with dyslexia. And italics makes it go to the side. It shifts it to the side, which also disrupts the clarity of the letters. So if you bold it and make it darker, then that means it stands out, but it doesn't disrupt the reading aspect of it. The size of the fonts, the colors of the fonts also are very important. So if the person, if the university or the school is working with that, then it helps people with dyslexia. And this isn't about dyslexia, but it's very interesting. If you're reading in a foreign language, you have a lot of the same problems as a person with dyslexia. They're very close, the problems. That's why, for example, if it's not your language, you read slower. If there's any kind of disruption in the letters and you can't see the letters clearly, you can't understand the word. If the letters are too close, they're hard to track because in your own language, you really don't read. You put in a lot from your mind. And that's where the problem with dyslexia comes from. But in another language, you don't have enough in your mind to put in. And so if you can't see it clearly, if you can't follow it clearly, you can't understand it. So here at UNNC, everybody practically has this problem. So it's really important to realize that it's like, a lot of times dyslexia is like reading in a foreign language.
I think based on Joey's experience, we can see that, you know, as long as we have the support environment and we work hard on ourselves, I believe, just like Jenny has said, most of students, most of people, even so they have the dyslexia, but they can still excel in their fields. So, Jenny, after Joey has introduced some help offered by our university, could you please, you know, share some different supporting system in various countries? Because I believe that you have made some, you know, samples in the in China or in England. What's the difference between the system provided by China, Chinese university, and British universities?
This sort of support is a very big word. Yeah. So there are many aspects in this sort of associated with this sort of support. So for example, by policy wise, or it could be parent wise or family wise, or it could be, you know, school wise. Anyway, so the first one, the policy wise, students are by policy. Many countries have their you know, certain fine-grained policy that a student at primary school level, at least by the end of certain age, the schools are, you know, obliged to report any, you know, if this student has certain reading disabilities, certain learning difficulties, the schools are obliged to observe this and provide certain help. And then there's a teacher, I forgot the term for that, but it's like shadow teacher. It's you know, something like that.
Yeah, teaching assistant.
Something like that, or special education need, teacher, something like that. I can't remember the term. I'm so sorry about that. But there is a certain rule in schools that they are supposed to help and provide all the students with the sort of difficulties. It does not have to be dyslexia alone, because it's very common that a child could have dyslexia or, you know, ADHD at the same time. It's very common. So this sort of teacher provide special help for them. And then, for example, in universities, it's very common that a student could observe their difficulties during studying in universities, especially in a UNC case. So in a UK university, for example, the universities can provide in-house assessment for learning difficulties, especially dyslexia. I believe UNC does that as well. So the universities can provide a sort of assessment and then give a report of what sort of difficulties you might have, what sort of resources we could provide. And this sort of resource associated with, for example, what sort of software we can provide, or, you know, pay for that perhaps, and 1 year license or 2 year license for a certain software that could help with your learning. So what I have been using before, and I found it really helpful, not just for people with dyslexia, and it's very helpful in general. If you want to pay for that, you can. There are some voice to text or text to voice, text to speech software that could be really helpful. And you might be looking for some AI tools, not just from universities, you can use it as well. So these are the general resources that you can look for. And for family wise or parent wise, it really depends on your parents. Like Joy's parents, like fantastic parents, like the best parents in the world. If a parent can observe these difficulties and really search for all the potential, you know, techniques, and really try and, you know, really apply on daily study, this is the ideal scenario. This is the ideal situations that every person would be, looking for. But sometimes the parents, or, you know, parents could be way too busy for that, or they could pay for someone else to do a train or to look for all these sorts of techniques. It also, they're also possible as well. And there are also some NGOs that are working on promoting all this sort of awareness, this learning difficulty thing to everyone. It really depends on which area you're in. Like, for example, if it's in the UK, it's probably sometimes parents would know that dyslexia thing is kind of common thing. Or if in the US, people would know if they do not know the features of dyslexia, they would know that dyslexia is a thing. But sometimes in the rest of the world or some other areas or regions, really depending on your family, to be honest, if you are willing into looking for this sort of learning difficulties, challenges, and sort of techniques for them, it's really different. It really depends on many situations.
I'd like to say a couple of things that anybody with these kind of problem challenges could do. There are things that are not expensive that anybody can do. Things like just using spell check, because it's difficult to spell. Creating, like if you get given a document at university, reformat the document, make the spaces bigger between things, use a different font that's easier to read, make the color a color that's easy for you to read, and that might be different for different people. You can reformat things, and like I'm often asked to read out loud, which is very funny. I'm the one with dyslexia, but I'm asked to read out loud. So I've learned things like that. If I format my paper to something that's clear, and if I put my finger underneath the words and read as I go with my finger, I do a much better job. So these kind of tricks that you can learn for yourself, and also go online and look. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about online. When my mother was doing this, there was no online. She really had to search, because online did not exist. But nowadays, there's a lot of these kind of things. So I think it's out of lack of knowledge or maybe a feeling of shame or something like that, people don't do what can help them. And that they really need to be able to be proactive and go out there and fix the problem so that it's not challenging you so much and you have more mental ability to deal with something else.
Jenny, you have just mentioned about some tool like AI can be used to, as the technology to help us to read. So can you tell us more details?
So this is a very interesting topic. Sometimes me and my fellows were, talking about AI all together. Because AI is a quite new thing, right? Because several years ago, everyone's talking about tools for dyslexia or like text to speech and speech to text thing. And you have to pay for that. It's really expensive. It's like 100 RMBs like per year to use that thing at all. And this speech to text or text to speech do not apply to all the documents. It's kind of problematic sometimes. And then boom, AI. sometimes you have to pay for that, but mostly it's often free.
Yeah.
So I personally would suggest that even for people who do not have features of dyslexia, it's very accessible, right? So sometimes when you're tired, like when you kind of see, you can't really see things clearly, like I wear glasses all the time and you're very tired, it's very often that, I just can't focus. I often ask AI to summarize all these key points and make bullet points for me for all the information from a certain article to understand everything. And I think there are some new features of different tools like Gemini. I think GPT has the speech to voice, text to speech button as well. If you get an answer from Gemini, I would definitely ask Gemini to read it out loud for me so I could release myself from, reading endlessly every day. Not just for people with dyslexia. I would definitely recommend this technique for everyone. It's very accessible. And also for AI, I definitely recommend AI for searching for learning techniques, because not everyone know every learning techniques. AI can do this for you. If you type, for example, I have difficulties with letters, I write reverse letters, I have difficulties in reading things, let AI give you answers or learning techniques for that. It's way faster than, looking for a person who can provide suggestions for you. And you have to talk for like 30 minutes and describe all the situations while you can type in the situations like five or like speech to text function to tell AI for like 5 minutes. And then you have suggestions. It's very quick, right?
Okay, nice suggestions. The last thing that I want to bring up before we end this episode is actually I'm quite curious about Joey, because even though you have dyslexia, but you also learn many languages, right? Like Spanish, French a little bit. So can you share some, techniques or some experience that you have when you're learning languages?
Well, in some ways, it's like going back to square one and revisiting. What, as Janine said, the first step is always a hard step. So you have to go back to square one and reunite yourself with the techniques that you have developed for other things to apply to this new situation, and experience that frustration. But I wanted to say this about it. I look at, and this goes back to the title of this podcast, it's a strange gift. Because actually dyslexia has really improved my life in a lot of ways. It's made me much more compassionate, much more hardworking. It makes me understand other people with problems because I have a problem. It makes me, it's really given me a lot of things. It's given me a lot of attributes, a lot of qualities in my life that I think are very useful. And I think that's why we have things like this, is so that we can learn these qualities, to be more understanding, to be more compassionate. So when I go back to, I start learning another language or I work on a language that I'm working on, I'm working on Chinese, and Chinese and English, dyslexia is not the same within both of them. They're quite different. But like I said, where I have dyslexia in Chinese is not knowing most words are like two parts, two characters, and I often get the characters backwards when I'm speaking. And so I don't know whether it's Mianze or Zimian, for example. I get it backwards until I know the word very well. And so I go back to that and I have to work on that. And it makes me understand my students better. I teach languages, and so I can relate to my students and the problems that they're having and things like that. And I think that's very, very useful to me in my career. So I do look at it as a strange gift. I think it's very important that everybody recognize, you know, if I were a perfect person, how would I have any feelings for other people? How would I have any understanding for other people? So I'm not a perfect person. I have this area that I have to work hard on, but that makes me a better teacher.
It's very, very interesting that for people with dyslexia that I met with, there are two features. I can also see that qualities in Joy as well are resilience. For resilience, of course, it's difficulties everywhere. It's very common. But for people who have, you know, have this resilient qualities, they can always achieve better. It's very, very interesting to see this resilience thing. And I definitely, well, it is still important for most people, but it's definitely, I would see this quality, you know, perform its role better on people with dyslexia. It's very interesting. And the second thing Joyce just talked about is repetition. Like you said, means or it's me, until you learn this word better, until you understand it better, until you sort of take it as an inner combination of word in your brain. It's very interesting because many people talk about this. So repetition is definitely a key in learning techniques. Not just repetition, but repetition to a better way that you sort of it becomes your innate abilities. It's very interesting. These two things, I see it very common.
And it develops things like patience.
Yay.
And so all these qualities that make a person a better person are these situations help us. And so it is a strange gift. It's something that I would not give it away. It can, you know, any kind of thing, it depends on how you use it and how you confront it, but it's an opportunity.
Yes. So we have talked about the features of dyslexia and how to cope with dyslexia. And also we share some strategies. So before we end this episode, is there any concluding remarks that you guys want to make as researchers or as teachers to people with dyslexia or people, you know, maybe they have no knowledge about it? You know, is some that thing you want to say to, you know, improve the awareness in this society?
I would say that for people who think that they may have dyslexia or because, you know, it's very common to this, we have kind of lack of assessment here. But the thing that I want to say to people who think they might have dyslexia or learning difficulties in general is that be brave to all sorts of possibilities, because you never know which technique really works for you. You never know which, you know, types of job could be a career for you. You never know which sort of opportunities that you have by just talking to a random people and you realize this is your strength. You never know. It's common. It's very common that we often see, you know, exams or a certain types of jobs as, you know, as a future goal. But be brave to more possibilities because you never know.
I just also feel that because I work with students, that I would really like to encourage anyone who feels that they might have dyslexia to investigate and not to struggle alone, to investigate and try to find both official and unofficial ways of supporting yourself so that you can move forward and be the most, to develop yourself to the highest level that you can.
So here is the end of our show. And it's very glad to have you guys here and share so many interesting stories and wonderful insights with us. So at the end of the show, we hope that this episode can help everyone who may have dyslexia to find your unique glasses and discover the hidden opportunities. And also, it's not just about dyslexia. I think all of people with so-called disability can find their potential, find their unique way to deal with the problem they have in their life. So thank you guys for joining again, and I hope that we can meet in the near future to talk more about dyslexia.